You're listening to Errol Parker and Clancy Overall, editors of the Batuta Advocate on Desert Rock FM.
Well, welcome back to the Batuta Advocate radio show, recording live from the Queensland Channel Country. You're with myself, Clancy Overall, and Errol Parker. And today's guest is another one of those big hitters we were able to get purely because the entire country's in lockdown and he's got fuck all else to do. You might know him as Tomo. Those close to him know him as Jeffrey Robert, the Nature Boy Thompson. How are you?
Ah, good, boys. Good to talk to the Batuta boys.
Now, how's things going, Tomo? Last we heard, you were you were in the headlines for being for quite a generous gesture with you were selling your bag of green for the bushfire effort. How did that all pan out?
That went pretty well. That was involved with the auctions, Lloyd's auctions, which I'm sort of indirectly tangled up with.
Yep.
So that raised, I think, about 55 grand.
Oh, good stuff.
So that was better than a poke in the eye with a stick, as they say.
Yeah, right.
Much better than the thing sitting in the cupboard getting moths eating it. Yeah,
because we heard at the same time that a New South Wales bowler called Doug the Rug, he actually decided to auction off his hairpiece for the bushfire appeal.
His baggy blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah, the old Bollinger, that's his name, right? Bollinger. Yeah. He'd be better off selling a bottle of Bollinger than selling his rug. I mean, how would that go with coronavirus? I think if he gave me a hairpiece, he'd want to belt shit out of it with a cricket bat to kill all the bloody bugs out of it.
Now, what are your thoughts on coronavirus? I mean, obviously, it's a smart thing to not be playing any cricket right now, but cricket is a distant kind of sport. It's not like these NRL players or these AFL players are going to be running into each other in probably a month's time. What have you kind of heard? Does it look like it's all, indefinitely on hold?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, even my wife said that to me the other day. She said, it's a bit weird because cricket, you're not near anybody. I mean, the only time these guys are near anybody when they give high fives and all this and that and a hug and all that sort
and
of shit.
Taps.
I mean, I never bothered with that. I didn't even bother walking up the other end. But but cricket, you know, everyone's scattered around the field generally. The slips aren't too close together. And it's just the guy bowling the ball, isn't it? You know, and then you throw the ball to somebody else. So, I mean, how do you wipe the ball all the time in between overs? But, I mean, basically, there's less contact in cricket than most things.
Yeah. I mean...
I don't know what they're going to do with it. It's still a matter of people coming to the ground, if they're going to let them in. I mean, the players can play with nobody there, that's for sure. I mean, they basically do anyway. You go to a state game there and there's nobody there except their bloody relatives and that, you know?
Yeah.
And then a test match... unless for the old different games. So, you know, there's a few there, but not as many as there used to be. So, I mean, that's the biggest problem, yeah.
What do you think it'd be like to play, say, a Boxing Day test match at the MCG to a state cricket crowd?
You know, you mean nobody there?
No one there.
That'd be really weird. That would be so weird. I didn't like the MCG anyway, but... Mm.
Yeah,
there's too many Victorians there for a starter.
Yeah, for sure.
Too big.
Yeah. And no, but the ground itself was just too big. I didn't like the bigness of the place. The crowd was great. You know, they get behind everybody and all that. But it'd be really weird to play. I don't know if it'd be hard because I've never had to put up with it. You know, when you walk out there and nobody there, you think, what's going on? Are we practicing or something?
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, coronavirus is one thing. I'm sure, you know, way back in the history books, we've seen something like this before where you know, a pandemic has shut down cricket. It's a rather old game. But you've actually seen, you know, similar world events that have kind of limited your gameplay or at least your work when you were commentating. There's been a lot of wars in the Middle East for a long time, and they've been playing cricket for a long time in the Middle East as well. Have you kind of seen that firsthand, you know, like either world conflicts?
Well, my first introduction to the way the rest of the world operates was 75, I think it was. Yeah, it would have been 74-5. In England, 75 it was, IRA.
Yeah, right.
You know, bombs going off in London.
Yeah.
I got blown up in the London Sportsman's Club. They had a deal with us because And most of our team were just hopeless gamblers. You know what I mean? They just love roulette and cards and, you know, whatever else. And so we had a free deal at the casinos.
Yeah,
so
right.
We're sitting in this London casino this night at the top of Oxford Street. IRA let off a bomb, which was only like not much higher than me, above us, below us, sorry, and right out the front. And every thing come flying off the wall, shit going everywhere. And I, besides the ones in our pants, but we're just sitting there and we all looked at one another. It's really weird, you know. It's just, you get this, it's like the wave hits you of the bomb blast, yeah, and then the sound comes later. It's really weird. And then all this shit flying everywhere, and you all look at one another and you're going, that's a freaking bomb. and it wasn't very far away. You know? So we thought, we checked the numbers, we're all safe, shit and dust all over us and all that. It was Rod Marsh, Richie Robinson, I forget who else, myself, a
all
couple
the
others.
All suspects.
Yeah. And we looked at one another and I said to him, well, back in they didn't get us, so we were safe now. So we kept drinking and carried on. 10 minutes later, announcement comes over the thing, those left in the club, please find an exit as soon as possible. We think there's another bomb. Well, fuck me, you never seen blokes move so quick that time. I never stopped till we got to down the Strand Hotel, which was probably 2 miles away.
Yeah, well, that...
Well, that was just one. Yeah. And then I go to Pakistan. That was my playing days. But then I go to Pakistan as a commentator. And Australia weren't there. It was New Zealand versus Pakistan.
Kiwis, yeah.
Lahore, I think it was. Lahore?
Yeah.
Karachi or Lahore. I can't remember now. Anyway, I was commentating. And it was a morning. And the evening before, it was a day off. So Hooksy and myself were out around the pool because there's nothing else to do in Pakistan. What a shithole back then. You couldn't go anywhere, you know, seriously. And it was better than my playing days. So we were playing, for lack of a better, volleyball with all these young engineer blokes, and they were French. And I said, what are you guys doing here? And they'd been employed by the Pakistan government to build submarines.
Yeah, right.
So these guys are all there, and we played for hours with them and drank with them. Anyway, next morning, we've got to go to work, right, with the cricket. So these guys had to go to work before us. So they had a bus outside parked right next to the restaurant where we had breakfast. And I kept walking out the door of my hotel room and thinking, oh, shit, I forgot something. Go back in, you know, because you've got a commentator. And then I forgot my tie. The last thing I went back for was my tie. As I opened the door to get my tie... this bomb's gone off, and I mean a serious bomb. And I knew a bomb by then. I'd already been blown up before. I've gone shit, you know. And everything gets blown off out of the room, you know, like seriously. So then I walk back out the room to see Danny Morrison, who does commentary still. And he's a lunatic. And we got a couple of Pakistani commentators with us. I go to Danny's room, which is just around the corner, and he was right above where the bus was, you know. What they did was blew up these guys in the bus because it was opposition. They didn't like the government that employed these blokes.
Yeah, right.
They took it out on these poor young bucks. And Danny's completely in the raw. There's glass and shit. All you can imagine the room. It's just like you couldn't throw that much broken glass around if you tried. And he's in the raw. And he doesn't know what they do. I said, Morrison, what are you doing? He's gone shit to up. He said, what the hell's that? I said, it's a bomb, dickhead. Get your wallet, get your passport and follow me. And I said, and by the way, why are you in the raw? He said, oh, I was just doing push-ups. Anyway, keep me away from home from his sheep. Anyway, so then I walk out the door and there's one of these Pakistanis with no dacks on. And I'm like, what the hell were you here? He was sitting on the shit house, and then the bomb goes off. What happens is anything in the shit house gets blown up. You have the water pressure. I won't tell you the rest, but you can guess. So then I grabbed Hooksy. I said, come with me, get out around the pool. We can't get blown up there. And I went down around the pool there, but these guys, seriously, they'd blown up the bus that these pool guys were on, these French guys that we were all just mates with. Because I was late getting out of the room, I didn't get killed because I would have sat right next to the window where their bus would have been 3 meters from me at the mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I kept forgetting shit. It was like somebody was looking after me and I didn't get down there.
Right.
Anyway, all these, the Pakistani army are out. They got snipers up on the roof and all this sort of crap. And I just walk outside at the bomb blast site with my camera. The whole deal is walk out there through the, you know, hoarding saying nobody in. I just walk through it, ducked underneath, and I'm filming the creator. I'm filming, you know, people blown up and all this shit. Because Morrison didn't still believe me it was a bomb. And I thought, oh, just show this dickhead what happens when a bomb goes. And I walk back in, and here's all these Pakistanis in there repairing the hotel. Like, this is instantly just for tourists. Yeah. Nothing went wrong. They're fucking repairing the joint like as if nothing happened. Oh, shit. This is the shit you got to put up with when you go to those places.
They move pretty quick, Jesus.
No, so I know it's, and then I missed another time. I missed the Potter's Bar train. You know the Potter's Bar train where 120 people got killed. That was heads out of Paddington or somewhere.
Right,
taxi was late.
Yeah,
I was late, so I missed the train. That one pulled out and smashed, wham! So I missed that one. And then another time in a plane, we hit some palm trees taking off.
Good grief.
And had to land again. And I've had a couple other times where some aeroplanes where some aeroplanes have blown up their motors and we had to do emergency landing. So I'm actually a cat with a tomcat with no lives, but I think I've lost about seven of them.
You tell us a little bit about that era. You were playing some people that really don't really get that much of a look in nowadays. Particularly, you would have got to know the West Indies quite well. A lot. You would have a much different time playing them than, you know, today's players. What was that like?
We used to play them a lot because I first played them in 76, 75 in the World Cup, then 76 they came here. Then we played them again in 78. We went there with Cricket Australia when Wales cricket was on. And then they came back, obviously, in the 80s, and Kerry Packer, when he got the cricket rights, didn't want shit cricket, so he kept bringing the West Indies over to play. They were big draw cards. So, our poor batsmen, they must have had much of a, they must have had a real restless life in their career, you know, in those 80s and that, the other, facing the West Indies all the time, because they just had a shitload of quick bowlers that were really good and scary, and they had a shitload of good batsmen. So, but it was good times, you know. They were really good blokes, you know.
Yeah.
Great blokes.
So, Tomo, I just want to, again, go back to fast bowling because I've heard this urban legend around is in 1979 they held a competition for the world's fastest bowler. I heard you had quite the hangover that day and you did win most accurate bowler and fastest bowler on the day.
That's correct. Well, it was World Series cricket, so I've been duped back into World Series cricket. I was banned, so I couldn't play. So what I used to do was train with the boys, and that was it. I couldn't go out and play when they played.
Yeah, yeah.
So how come you were banned?
Because we'd had a Kerry Packer tried to get me released from Cricket Australia to play, and they didn't want me playing because then it would have been Lillian Thompson back again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big draw card over the Cricket Australia test team that were there, you know?
Yeah.
So they got me blocked. So here I am in Perth, it was, and what I used to do when the boys went out in the field was go up in the box with Kerry Packer. There was Strop, Hoggs, Don Lane, or whatever celebrities from TV were there, and we'd just get on the gas. You know?
Beautiful, beautiful.
So the boys, I forget what happened, they were training, warming up or whatever, and I'm up there having a few beers because I don't think it was probably going to be a day-nighter, so it was after lunch, you know?
Yeah.
And I've thrown down probably half a dozen beers. And KP, Kerry Packer's walked up to me and he's gone, what are you doing here, son? You know, I can't talk to him, but it was even, you know, deeper and rougher than that. I said, what do you mean, boss? What else do I fucking do? This is all I do. You know? He said, the first bowling competition's on that out, son. I said, yeah, well, I can't go in that.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says, I run this joint, son. You can go in it. He said, once more, you better win. Now, on my way down, I'm thinking, well, I reckon he's got a few grand on this, on me winning this. So I better sober up with Aria, win this frigging thing. I wasn't so much worried about the money. I was worried about Kerry Packer fucking strangling me. So we go down, and I got no gear. And I said to the boys, who's got some shit? And I had a beer in my hand still. So there's Joel Garner and Michael Holding, Andy Roberts, everyone there, and Garth LaRue and Safraz and buddy, no, he wasn't there. It was Imran strutting around like cool as can be, you know, and all this shit. And I'm watching this shit, and I borrowed some gear off Dennis and some off Lenny Pascoe. Hadley was there as well, Richard Hadley, I think. He had them all there. And I'm watching them bowl. And they're bowling bounces, and they're bowling rat power. You know, they're bowling. But I thought, this is shit. I could do this left-handed. So I put down my beer. It's my turn to bowl. And I worked it out very quickly. You just don't hit the pitch, bowl full tosses, and bowl them straight, and hit the stumps. So I won $5,000 for the fastest and $5,000 for the straightest. Thank you very much. And I tell you, come up to me was anyway, he's a match referee, wasn't he? He come up to me afterwards, and he said, "Hey, Tomo," he said, "we're all sharing this, aren't we?" Mike Proctor.
Yeah.
I said, "Procky, piss off!" I said, "Mate, you're a medium pacer. You got no fucking chance." That's seriously. But I went upstairs, and
he used to bowl off the wrong foot, didn't he?
Yeah. He was another one. He bowled pretty rapid and could bat too. That, but he was a pretty handy cricketer. Yeah,
he would have a sore back
apartheid.
Now.
No, he isn't. He's good as gold. He's built like a tank.
I think it was a rough action though, wasn't it? Off the foot, twisting and
Shit. You know, as a kid coming in, you would see him bowling. You would sit. Yeah, good mate. Just keep do your best. You know? When you get those kids with shit actions, you just pretend you're helping them.
Yeah. How did you develop your action? Because it's not an ordinary one, but it's one that's obviously hasn't been able to be beaten in terms of raw speed.
Just born with it. Born with it. Luckily, you know, I mean, I didn't mean it. It was the way my dad bowled like that, and I was just born like bowled like that. Well, some of my brothers bowled like that, you know, at the time. My boys here can bowl exactly like me. And I didn't show them. They just know it works pretty easy, you know, so they worked it out for themselves.
Yeah.
Tom, you just mentioned before the great man Lenny Pascoe. You two kind of came up together. Were you neighbours as kids, or you lived in the same area, or where did you two meet?
We probably lived, to be truthful, about five or six Ks apart. Well, it wasn't Ks in those days, but miles, but that's what it was. And I only ran into him at primary school. We actually played against one another.
Yeah, right.
We didn't play against one another playing rugby league, but we did maybe in football or soccer.
Yeah.
But we definitely did in cricket, yeah. So the first day I met Lenny, it was Connell Park Primary versus North Bankstown or something like that, I think he went to. Anyway, he bowled first and got about 5 wickets or something like that for about 10 or 12.
Yeah.
Thought he was hot shit Saturday. I bowled second and got 7 for about 6. and we brought him out the water. And it was funny, that was our first ever meeting, and then we just ran into one another after that. You know, when you start playing on weekends, you start meeting one another. And we didn't really team up till we went to high school. Yeah. We went to the same high school there, so we just played together from there on.
All the way up.
Yeah.
What was it like? I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of famous cricketers have come out of that part of the world since then as well. Was it a religion out there, weekend sport, particularly cricket?
What it was it was the outskirts of Sydney.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So all the young married couples got out of Sydney and moved to those areas, Bankstown, right. Liverpool, and that, you know, and that's where all the young kids
went.
You know, Sydney got old, and the suburbs started to take over, you know, and now it's gone to Penrith and such, you know, way, way out further. But we were the outskirts of Sydney, and we had so many good players. I mean, look at Canterbury Bankstown rugby league team. Yeah. Half of them played with us, and vice versa. We were all the kids that all played everything together, you know?
And
that's why it was just a no-brainer.
Do you think the Westie thing is lacking in the Australian cricket side at the moment? Because they're a bit cookie-cutter nowadays. They're a bit woman's day. But back in your day, there was a bit more rough around the edges.
Yeah, well, like, and even then, you know, like you had the War Boys, and then you had...
Well, they were after us. They played with our club. They were with our club. So the War Boys were there. There was Steve Smalley and Davis, all these blokes that had come on from there. There was a lot more came from Bankstown. I was the second ever from Bankstown to play for Australia. There was a bloke before me called Graham Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it was myself and then Lenny after that. That started the ball rolling, you know, and then it was just a procession, you know.
So how long were you playing in Bankstown before the big time came knocking?
Well, to be honest with you, Errol, and this has not been a big hit, I should have played for Australia when I was 16 or 17.
Yeah, right.
I played first grade and got, I don't know, 60 wickets in my first year. We were playing against Test players.
Yeah.
And I'd get them out.
Yeah.
You know, they were scared shit of me. At 16, I was bowling like a rocket.
Yeah.
You know? And nothing was new.
Yeah.
And that's not being big-headed. I was looking at the players that were playing for New South Wales and for Australia there, and if I couldn't have done better, I'd have given it away.
Yeah.
But, you know, you could see that there, and I'm a guy that doesn't give up easy, and, well, we weren't even playing for New South Wales then, you know?
Yeah.
I went to their training and got everyone out, scared the shit out of them, but they didn't pick Lenny and myself because we used to go surfing. We used to go out in the bush and then go surfing and that all the time, you know, and turn up to training every now and then and scare the shit out of everyone and then disappear again, you know. And then finally they had to pick us, you know, when I was 21 or something like that. So it was a delayed thing, you know. It's probably my own fault a bit with attitude, but it could have happened 5 years earlier.
You and Lenny used to go pigging in the off-season. That was your...
Well, not Lenny, but I did,
right. Where'd you pick that up? Because, I mean, I know you're in the outskirts of Sydney. Back then, Bankstown's almost semi-rural. That's quite an interesting off-season activity. Did it keep you right in the head, you reckon? Was it almost therapeutic going out there?
Yeah, it was. It was because it got me away from all the press and all this, all of a sudden being a kid that used to be left alone, that to being bombarded, you know? And it didn't really worry me, but I just couldn't be bothered with that shit. And I thought the best way to do this is go out in the farms. See, my aunties and uncles that came from out Condobra.
Yeah, right.
Middle of New South Wales.
Shannon Knoll country.
Well, exactly. So we could go out there anytime we liked.
Yeah, right.
And I used to go out there and Tottenham, which is a bit north of there. And then I took the Bankstown team out there, and we'd play on Easter weekends, and we'd drink them out of ouzo, rum, everything that was going. And the boys just thought, how good's this out in the bush, you know? And it's just the best place ever. You know, and all the teams I've ever played in, half the team were made up of kids from the bush.
Yeah, right.
They were always this is not a bullshit story. They were always the toughest and better players you play with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're in the ship, you could count on them to try and hang in there, you know.
In that era, you had a lot of, I mean, particularly in the Australian side, you had a lot, like, you know, there was someone from everywhere in the country. Nowadays,
all over.
Nowadays there's often, like, there's a lot of kind of feeder areas and, you know, certain schools people go to where they come out of and play cricket. But back then you could have someone from Tassie, you'd have someone from, Bankstown, someone from the bush, South Western Australia.
You know, guys that were farmers, guys from off... Hey, guys that were sheep farmers, all this sort of thing. Yeah, you know, you didn't realise that till you met up with them and what they did, you know.
And they're all similar personalities too, it sounds like, you know.
Well, the kids then had to pack up and leave those country areas because nobody went looking for them.
Yeah.
And had to go to the city and hope like shit they got picked.
Yeah.
You know, now they they say they go looking for them and all that sort of stuff, but yeah. I don't know how hard they look. And it depends. It depends how good the bloke is, the talent scout, whether he's got an idea or whatever, whether he picks the right kids. I go out in the bush and I see kids that are really, really good and they haven't got to go.
Yeah.
And I say, what the fuck's going on here? And their mothers say to me, Tomo, can you help him out? I mean, what am I going to do? I'm not, because cricket's so involved now. Yeah. You can't just walk up and say, oh, just have a look at this kid. You know, the bullshitters that have been hired by Cricket Australia, or the bullshitters, would get their nose out of joint and say, oh, we can't have him in here. It's going to look bad for me. Yeah. I can let him in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Tomo's just walked in here with an iPhone video.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen but now is that what I heard of Cricket Australia is those bullshitters, like assistant coaches, well, who needs a coach, let alone an assistant coach, will be redundant, apparently.
Yeah, right.
So, and there's going to be a few more of the staff, you know, all these bloody staff that are, want a piece of the cake are all going to be getting the arse. So apparently one of the coaches, state coach, said the other day to a bloke I know, that cricket will go back 15 years when this COVID's all over.
Yeah, right.
Now, what he meant by that was there will be less crutches in the dressing room, less people, less bullshit advisors, and the players will actually have to fucking think for themselves for once, which is, mate, when we played, there was no coach. We just, there was us in the room, the manager, and the roomies, you know, the guys that got you the piss. That's it. So we, you know, if you're playing for Australia, God, you should have fucking sorted out your life by then and know what you've got to do and all that sort of shit. What do you need some wanker telling you, that food there's no good for you? Well, we used to have a pile of cigarettes to the roof, boxes from beds and ledges and piss galore. Nobody ever come in and said, you can't smoke that or drink that. You won't be a fucking good player. Imagine saying that to Doug Walters. He'd have locked the pricks out.
You reckon they're going to trim a bit of fat in the next few months?
Well, it'll be good fat. It's stuff that needs to be trimmed. You know what I mean? It's the, I call them the bullshit brigade.
Yeah.
The jobs for the boys, you know, that have been going on for ages, you know? Like Cricket Australia, for instance, they reduced 200 plus of their staff, their wages by 80%, right?
Yeah.
80% discount.
Yep.
And how much that saved them? $3 million. That's all that saved them by cutting the ass out of their pay. And yet in March, they got paid $100 million from Channel 7 and Fox.
Yeah.
So where did that fucking money go to?
On the
tell me how that doesn't add up to.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, I mean, you guys weren't flying business either, were you?
Well, no. We were down the cattle class and you weren't allowed to even take your wife. Anyone.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that. So how long away would you be from the family? You know, you got three boys. You could have been away for months on end.
Yeah, I do a few shows with Dougie Waters, right? Mine was 4.5 months, England.
Yeah.
Right, 4.5 months you'd be away for, and that seemed like an eternity. I wasn't married then, but that was the initial one. Dougie Waters said his first tour of England was 7.5 months. he was away 7.5 months because they went on a boat, you know?
Well, yeah, and
it wasn't coronavirus either.
No, but he was helped off an aeroplane at one point with a mystery illness. I've been told after he...
That would have been DTs. They would have ran out of piss. That's all it would have been.
I think he might have caught it from the last can of KB he had on the flight. Oh.
Yeah, just don't let those hosties open them for you. You know, make sure you open your own bottle. even if it is number 99 or whatever.
I read a great yarn by Kerry O'Keefe who said the famous yarn about Booney with the 52 cans. He was actually there for the first crack at that, and you were there. Was that?
I was there. I was sitting. I don't know what Skull tells you, but this is true. There was Dougie on the wing.
Yeah.
Marshy was in the middle. I was on the aisle. I was the procurer of piss. I had to make sure they were on song. Now, I don't know if you've had a drink with me, but I can throw them down.
I've seen you in full flight. Yeah.
So I had to make sure they were on pace. Right? I was never going to keep up with them. But, yeah, that was the story. So we had to drink 18 cans a leg, three legs.
Yeah.
You know, 16 cans, sorry, yeah, to get it up to the, you know, where what it was going to be.
16 and, cans
a leg. I stopped at Sydney, Bahrain. Yeah. In those days, Bahrain. So we went Sydney, Singapore, and then Bahrain. I stopped 32 at Bahrain, and they did the rest to London. And I had to put Marshy's false teeth in, the whole deal, dress him, and he was hanging between Lenny Pascoe and myself.
Yeah. So he held the crown until the Launceston Bulldog.
Yeah, I still debate this. So it's not an old guy living in the past, but he drank 48 cans on that plane. We never counted anything on the ground, and all the shit we had in Sydney before we started, he would have drank 60-odd cans nonstop. And then we went to the hotel we were staying at in London, and he bought a whole round of Heineken's for us. I said, Bacchus, just get to bed, you dickhead. Yeah.
Imagine what would happen if you did that now.
Oh, you wouldn't get the chance. I mean,
you'd
I don't
be
know.
On next plane home, wouldn't you?
Well, I can't remember plane flights. It's been that long now, but you get on a plane now and you've got to beg for a fucking beer. You know, you're halfway through the flight before they bring them out.
Mate, if a player did that nowadays, they'd book them for an appointment with a shrink immediately. Yeah.
No, that's right. They say there's something wrong with you. Yeah.
Jeff, can you tell us about your other love of speed, and that comes from your motor cars? I was told a while ago by a mate of mine who loves a yarn, so I don't know how true this is, but when you first got paid up in Queensland, you went and bought yourself a Ferrari and a PT boat from the Second World War.
No, it wasn't a PT boat. It was just looked like that shape. But,
oh, right.
No, I've always liked cars. I mean, mate, three of my brothers were basically, mechanics.
Yeah.
So we used to fix everybody's car. You can imagine how we had one stage there when I was a kid. We had three cars each.
Yeah, right.
There's five of us. So you can imagine our car, our place looked like a car yard.
Were you one of those properties with all the cars out front on blocks?
Oh, yeah. And then their mates would bring around their cars for us to fix.
Yeah.
We used to do stunt driving up and down the street and on motorbikes and bloody everything. I mean, that was it. Go to Speedway, race cars, go to the drags. And it was just I always loved cars. You know, I used to be late for cricket because I used to be out at the car races.
Yeah.
On a Saturday morning because they'd have the time trials for the Australian Grand Prix at Warwick Farm and all that. And I'd be out there watching all the cars race and dreaming that I wanted to do that shit.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to pack up and piss off and go to cricket and I'd turn up late, you know, but I couldn't care less. Always loved cars, you know.
Yeah.
And to buy that Ferrari was not a lairising thing. I just thought, I want to see what these things go like. You hear about them and had the opportunity. It was cool, but it was didn't take a flogger, didn't handle a flogger, didn't handle country roads.
Nothing like the Charger.
No. Kangaroos, you just cut the legs out from you. You didn't really kill them, you know. You had to go back and run. You had to go back and run over it. No, but always love cars. I still love cars. Bike races.
Yeah.
I'm always watching the shit on the boys come past and say, "What are you watching that shit for, old man?" And they know I'm. They know I'm a rev head.
Can you just tell us now, for someone in that era, coming from Bankstown, to then, you know, find yourself sitting in Jamaica with a bunch of West Indian cricketers, or, you know, in Pakistan or in England, who do you reckon was, the most talented cricketer you came up against, and who was the funniest?
Obviously, talent was Viv Richards.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a guy that wouldn't have trained. He was a natural, you know. He just...
Yeah.
You know, like me, you just go and play and what works out, works out. I don't think he would have been coached. Viv was just Viv and a great bloke. Him and I were great mates, so still are. So he was just, to me, was great fun playing against him because you had to pull your finger out. You know, there was no easy times playing against Viv. and he didn't get any easy times playing against me.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like in that era. You know, you play the West Indies, you play the best, you always try your best.
Yeah.
And that's when you're most satisfied, whether you win or lose. You know, if you play well, you're happy, you know?
Yeah.
So Viv was great. All those guys, Andy Roberts, Michael Holding, they're all different characters, just like we are, you know? Yeah. Some are quite... If Michael Holding had a mongrel streak in him, he would have got twice as many wickets.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Michael was too nice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was quick and all that, but he was just too nice. He wasn't nasty enough, you know?
Yeah, very cool. Garam and Colette.
Yeah. But that's him, you know?
Jeffrey, you should try going around a week after this one.
No. But Poms were good blokes, you know, back then.
Useless at cricket, though.
Yeah, not the first ones. I see they're trying to get us there in July and August.
Yeah.
They want us to go there. I mean, how would you fucking walk into it? That's like flying to New York. Who wants to go to New York?
No,
they'd want to tidy up there. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't think it'll work anyway.
A bit ambitious.
Yeah, that's right. A bit dreamy. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you you'd occasionally light up, you know, a bit of a competitive streak. What do you reckon was the most cruel thing you did to an opposition batsman in your time as an Australian fast bowler?
Probably one that just makes me laugh is, and I forgot all about it, was there was a spinner for England. You wouldn't know this, but it'd be too early for you, Blakes. He was even played before I played. You know, I caught the arse end of him. Yeah. His name was Fred Titmus. Right? He was an off spinner, just a typical spinner, meek and mild, you know. They're like frustrated fast bowler spinners. They've got an attitude, but they can't fucking bruise a peach, you know? So, anyway, what had happened to him was the year before, he fucking had a boating accident. And how unlucky is that, to have a boating accident in England? I wouldn't even own a boat in England. That shit up. Anyway, shit, and cut his big toe off. Cut a couple of his toe off, but his big toe. So he's come out to face me in that test in Brisbane or somewhere, or Perth, in that initial series where I cleaned him up. And I've hit him flush on the fucking foot where his big toe was supposed to be. How much do you reckon that would fucking hurt? Sick, that's a bit warped. I'm just going to get my earpiece back in. I forgot all about that one, but that was he just ran around everywhere. You know when you cut a chook's head off and it goes doing wheelies around your backyard? It was a bit like that.
So, Shama, I think a lot of our listeners are really wondering, is 161 kilometres an hour the fastest you've ever bowled? Have you ever bowled faster than 100 mile an hour?
Oh, easily. If these guys are bowling 150 and I see tail enders coming forward, slogging them over their back of their heads and all that, supposed to be 150.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. And they like I've said before, the blokes have told me, Andrew, they do it different. They time them out the hand because they're not as quick.
Yeah.
See, they timed us at the batting area, which makes a heck of a difference.
Oh, yeah, it does.
So they tell me I would have bowled in the mid-170s.
That's great.
Oh, mate, I know it was quick because I hit a lot of guys that never moved before I hit them. You know, I'm sitting there and they just bang, like a gunshot, which is really strange when you think about it. Yeah. And I'm talking about top-level players.
Yeah.
Not shit kickers.
Yeah, do you think that's why Brett Lee didn't really, because he bowled 100 miles an hour at, I think, the 2006 World Cup. It came up on the big screen that he just bowled, you know, arguably the fastest ball, and he just took a look at that and he was just like, I'm obviously not the fastest bowler in the world, but, you know, that's nice.
Yeah. No, Brett was sharp. He's a good bloke. Don't worry about that. Shahbakhtar's one in the... He had his own fucking radar thing. We were doing it's funny how you get caught out in it.
Yeah.
We were there commentating. I was there commentating. That was that tour I said before we got blown up. anyway, this game at Lahore, that was the game. I'm sort of sitting there and I said to the engineer, I said, why have we got another radar thing down there? He said, oh, Tomo, that's not ours. That's the Pakistanis.
Yeah, right.
I said, well, it doesn't even read the same as ours. He said, it was 12 Ks quicker than our one, the proper one. So does that answer your question on his fucking record? No, that's a true story. I was there.
We'll let you go. There's plenty more yarns to tell. We've got to get you in a microphone, in front of a microphone another day, and we can go for hours. But
I'll tell you one more. But just talking on the current cricket, was this spitting thing, spitting on the ball?
We'll
just finish up on that. How ironic's that? We've just got nailed for using sandpaper a year or so ago, whatever it was, and all that, and now they want to stop you spitting on the ball and want to give you some substance to rub the ball. Why don't they just get one of those things like in the Woolworths or the shopping marks where you get the bag off
and just put
a fucking roll of sandpaper at either end and let them fucking do what they like. At least it's healthier than spitting on the ball.
Did you think that was a bit of a beat up? I mean, you were sitting there watching it. The entire country stood still watching that, watching a bit of, you know, who knows what it was. It looked a lot like sandpaper.
I myself and everyone else that had played before Archie were really, I was really angry at the time.
Yeah.
I was really angry that it was so dumb, so ridiculous. And then the shit they said afterwards, instead of being gagged and somebody, all the bullshitters in the room, like all the Cricket Australia, should have jumped in and said, none of you guys are saying a word, we'll handle this.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't done. They let him, let Steve Smith go out there and Spruik and whoever else involved, and all they did was shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
They should have gagged them. And in the end, it wasn't that big a deal.
No,
I don't care because of what I said before. You know, the boundaries are brought in, the bats are huge, they can use as many grips as they want and all this, and you can't do much of the ball. What a lot of bullshit.
Yeah.
Well, we spoke to Mike Whitney not too long after that happened, and we asked him, if Alan Border came up to you and said, tamper the fuck out of this fucking ball, would you do it? And he says, oh, of course. You know, you do what the captain tells you, blah, 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 blah. And then we asked him, if you had everything at your disposal, how would you tamper a ball? And he says, not with a tiny piece of sandpaper. It's much easier to shine a ball than it is to rough one up.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe they want to rough it up, you know, and use reverse swing it when it's old. The best thing I ever had was a brand new ball and swing the bloody thing as hard as a rock, the new ball.
Yeah.
Why wait for the thing to get old?
Yeah,
by then the horse is bolted. I'll tell you what happened one day. We were playing up here in at the Gabba, playing Tasmania, flat as shit wicket. Ball was shit, you know, by the Kookaburra had started, well, making really bad balls, and because it was a Motley, nobody else said, there was no opposition. So the shit they were making was crap, soft. And Greg Chappell said to me, how are we going to get rid of this ball? I was bowling, Booney was batting, I think, and it was like a marshmallow. And I said, I'll fix this freaking thing up. It was a lunch break. So what I did was this is a true story. Remember those old razor blades, Gillette things?
Yeah.
Just a blade on either side, a flat piece of steel?
Yeah.
I put that in my pocket. And I'd run around the quarter seam with it and around the main seam, you know, where all the stitches
are.
I pushed it a bit harsh. I pulled this board of booty Australia, and the fucking thing's nearly fallen in the quarters like an orange. And I said, I'd asked the umpire before the lunch break, this bullshit. And he said, no, there's nothing wrong with this. Anyway, straight after lunch, I tried it too. And I've gone, I told you this ball was fucked. Look at this. And he's gone, Jesus, I've never seen a ball do this before. And it's got clean cut. It's not even frayed on the stitch. It's fucking clean cut. It was very odd. Anyway, we got a new ball, and I got him out. We won the fucking match. That's how you cheat.
What a yarn.
That's good.
Well, Tomo, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much. Well, always a pleasure.
There's more to come, I reckon. We might have to sit Tomo in front of a mic, especially during isolation. I reckon there's plenty more yarns to come. There's no fucking cricket on, that's for sure.
No, not at the moment. Not for a while.
We'll definitely have to get you back, Jeff. It's been great fun.
All right. Cheers, boys.
Thanks, Jeff.